Welcome to Depressed and Shit, where conversations on mental health don't have to look or sound any one specific way. I'm your host, Leah Matta, and I am not a therapist, and this is not a substitute for therapy. No, honey, there is no therapy here. We share our sad thoughts, we think them together, we lament them together, and we lift each other up via sharing. Can I get a fuck yes? And that is the depressed and shit circle of life. Let's get into today. I have gotta say, I am just fucking honored to release this episode to you today. It is informative, it is emotional, and it is so real. We talk gender and sexuality and how those two things intertwine with the loss of a friend and how that intertwines with the ending, the stopping of seeing a therapist. Now, I have featured a ton of episodes and stories on starting therapy, on going to therapy, on even being the fucking person that conducts the therapy itself, but this is the first depressed episode on ending therapy. Joseph Baca, pronouns are he, she, and they, is, by literally all accounts, the bee's knees. In Leah talk, that means amazing. And has been through a lot with their gender identity and with grief and loss. I gotta say, from a personal standpoint, talking with Joseph was equally healing for me and came at a precious moment in my life when I've sort of been coming to fully realize my own bisexuality, which has taken me 30 years of life to fully get, and I'm still figuring it out. So, Joseph, thanks. Content warning, this episode involves discussion of death by suicide. Hey, if you dig the show, especially if you're tuning in via Stitcher, hit that subscribe button for weekly alerts on new episode drops. And if you're feeling fancy, drop us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. It actually really helps us. All right, here's Joseph Baca. Baca, welcome to Depressed and Shit. You are officially a depressed guest.
Ah, this is cool shit. I'm really bad at saying bad words, so I'm gonna try, but
you don't say bad words very frequently.
I do, but I'm a person who likes to like choose my words very carefully. So okay. Unless I'm like very angry about something or with someone, then I won't do it.
That is a major fundamental difference between you and I, because I curse like a motherfucker, which is funny because we both work a lot with kids and I should learn those experiences and apply them to the rest of my life, but I don't.
One time I said damn and I felt bad, but I think they're fine.
That's really funny to me. I've said crap in front of my older, I have some middle school, almost high school age students, and I think they like thought I was cool for saying it. Little street cred. All right. Thanks so much for coming on today to get into the sad shit, right? To talk about depression and how depression, or maybe I don't know yet, maybe space away from your depression has impacted your experience and your expression of gender. And with all that being said, you have just made the decision to part ties with your therapist, which is a very real thing. And it happens for a lot of different reasons for folks. So let's begin at the beginning, shall we? You have a rather specific memory of what you describe as your life's intro into depression, and it involves your mom. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, I'm like getting emotional already. This is weird. Did not expect this.
It's okay. I'm here with you.
Thanks. Yeah, so when I was a teenager, my mom was diagnosed with postpartum depression. It was with her fourth child, so my third sibling.
She had recently given birth.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of shit was going on. It was, yeah, the recession was going on. She had to stop working because she was pregnant. Mm-hmm. In the middle of that pregnancy, my dad got laid off. We were in the middle of losing our house. my sister was born and we were very poor. And so she was just like, what is happening? How are we going to take care of this baby? And she was just super depressed for, I mean, when I'm saying super depressed, it was like, I never saw her leave the room for maybe, I want to say, a year.
Wow.
And that was hard because that's my mom.
She with your sister, but absolutely. And you were like, you were a teenager, you said?
Yeah.
Did you feel like you understood what was going on with her?
Definitely no. Well, like in a way, like I had heard of depression, but you know, the stigma. So like people don't really talk about it. You don't learn about it.
Totally.
When I saw it happening, I was like, oh, this is what depression is. Like that is hard. But then like my dad was really good about like keeping the rest of us occupied or like uplifted on the weekends. He'd just be like, your mom needs some space. I was like, let's go to the movies. And then we'd be like, well, why can't mom come? And it's like, well, she doesn't really like feel like it right now. It's like, mm-hmm. Okay, well, at least we're going to go out and do something.
And this was obviously sort of like a change from your family dynamics before this happened.
Yeah, my mom was kind of, she's the one that like keeps all the shit together in the house.
Right.
So I think that was a big part of the depression too, was that she felt like she had failed us. She wasn't able to keep up with the bills. And I guess it was like, she felt like the home was collapsing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was weird. And then me, I'm like a big Disney movie person. So I was like, but love conquers all. You love us, don't you? So love's going to beat depression.
Right. Simple, unnuanced, grand messages, which nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. I didn't really understand it truly until I think college.
Okay. Did you leave home for college or leave your hometown?
Yeah, I went to the East Coast.
Got it. You got distance. Yeah.
Yeah, I needed distance for other reasons.
Got it.
That related to gender.
Yeah.
And sexuality.
At this point in time that you're describing to us, I guess you said you were 14. What was your relationship like to your gender at that point in your life?
I had definitely always been like, I don't feel like the rest of the boys. And most of my friends were girls. And I also was not, I wasn't like in tune with my sexuality yet either.
Not in tune, you said?
Yeah. My first crush was Lance Bass from NSYNC. And I was like 5 years old. But I just told myself, I just think he's really cool. And I want to be like him because all the girls like him.
Got it.
But then also like I had hardcore crushes on multiple girls all through my life. So it was, and like bisexuality wasn't a thing in my mind. It was like, that's not real. That's not real. Mm-hmm. It's just that you're either gay or you're not.
Bisexuality has like always been so difficult for people to like, to just accept or like take as true. It's that version of sexuality I feel has always gotten such an unfair rap, even though it's so real.
Yeah.
So how do you identify now? Can you give us a sort of explanation of where you're at now with your relationship to your gender and your sexuality, however you feel comfortable?
Yeah, my three words that I use are queer, non-binary, demi-boy.
I learned the word demi-boy from you.
Yay!
You had posted something on Facebook maybe a year ago, and I had not come across that word yet, and I thank you for that.
Thank you for learning.
I guess maybe for a listener that might be dumb like me and not know what it is, we should explain what demi-boy.
Okay, for sure. Demi-boy, people have their own definitions. But it's just, again, for me, I still look like a guy. When I meet people, they assume I am a guy. I feel partly like a guy, but internally there's dissonance there. So it's just like, do I feel like a girl too? And then it's like, well, I don't really, maybe it's like both sometimes. Demi, like demigod, you know, part god. So
that is the word that comes to mind for me, demigod, which I love. So how long have you been where you're at now with your gender identity?
I'm going to say at least a couple years.
Mm-hmm.
No, probably more. Last year was the first time I told everybody. I mean, not everybody, but I made it public on social media, except for a very specific group of family members.
That must have been laborious to sort of design.
Yeah, I have a Facebook list called Fam, and there's like 97 people. And it's just like, anytime I post a queer thing, I have to click that setting and be like, they don't see that one.
And that's where we're at still currently?
A little less. Last year, I told my mom. I haven't explicitly told my dad, but he's kind of in the loop about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then my siblings know.
This sounds, but this might just be me projecting. This sounds like it would be difficult, but maybe it's just what works for you.
Yeah, and I've definitely done a lot of thinking about it and processing in therapy. And right now, yes, that is what is working for me. And I'm also learning new words. Like a couple weeks ago, I learned the word boy flux.
Oh.
And there's also girl flux. So it's like you like flux in and out of boyness.
Oh, cool.
I think I might like that one too.
Totally. And
I don't know yet because I'm still living with my grandparents. So I have to be careful with my wardrobe.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure like if I were to live alone and wear whatever I want all the time, I don't know if that would affect the identity that I choose. And also clothes don't have to have gender. Like I can identify as a woman if I wear guy clothes, maybe.
Yeah, agreed.
Also and I queer. Think,
go for it.
Is this so vague?
Okay, so I had this conversation with a fellow cis, like I am cis, and I had this conversation with a cis friend recently about I love queer and I identify as it, yet it feels so vague and doesn't help me explain myself to myself and to other people in a way.
Yeah, I like it because of that. It's just like it's one word, simple. It's like queer. And it's like, what does that mean? And I'm like, well, if you want to get into it, we can have that conversation. Like for me, it's partly about my demisexuality too, another demi word.
Do you feel like you're in a position to have to explain this to people a lot? I realize the irony of me asking that as we are on this podcast of me asking you about it, but I'm curious.
I mean, I'm always open to explaining it. So it's just like, if you ask me, sure, I'll let you know. It doesn't feel laborious to me at the moment. Maybe that'll change at some point.
Got it.
But I love to spread new information and also give new words to people who don't know them that they might like for them, because that's how it happened for me.
How did it happen for you?
Googling and like following different queer people on Instagram, and they identify as that. And I'm like, okay, maybe that's me, or mm-hmm. maybe this is me, or they, you know, like share a post from somebody else. And I'm like, oh, they're like me.
I think Instagram, I guess I would say all social media, but my social media use is mostly Instagram. I have found that Instagram has actually been this incredible tool recently for opportunity to expand the gender binary and learn about everything that's out there. I think Instagram's been fucking incredible for that in recent years.
Yeah. I do most of my learning from there, which is like, I can also read books.
You can, but
I guess I have, I don't know. I talked to my therapist about this. I was like, I don't know if I have, I'm just like undiagnosed with ADD or not, because it's so hard for me to read and it always has been.
Yeah.
I don't know.
From my external perspective, you definitely seem like someone that's very somatic and kinesthetic based, right? Like from your involvement in movement and like whole body.
Definitely.
Like body mind linking up kind of thing.
That is very accurate.
Yeah. So let's move back towards your journey with a near depression. You actually, I don't know how many years ago it was, you lost someone very close to you relatively recently. When was that? And was it sudden?
It was 2 months after he who shall not be named became president. So I definitely blame my friend's death on that dude.
Wow.
I had planned this art Euro trip 2 months out of the country. I went to Germany, I went to London, I went back to Italy where I studied physical theater. And this friend I had met in undergrad, he was actually the first person I ever hated.
Oh.
Because he was just, and he, like, I don't even know if, I'm going to use his name. If Josh were alive today, I don't know what pronouns he would be comfortable with.
Okay.
And so the first time I met Josh, they were wearing crop top, booty shorts, no shoes, hair dyed bright orange. And I was like, who is this person? They make me feel uncomfortable with my identity.
They sparked something.
Mm-hmm. I was like, I have spent my whole life suppressing this sort of expression that you are having right now. And it makes me feel uncomfortable that you're so freely doing it and don't give a shit. I did another bad word. Yay.
Yeah. I'm going to send you a cupcake for every time you say
that. Great. I'm going to have three probably. We ended up being in this like improv sketch group for 2 months that met almost every night. So we became very close very quickly, and I learned to love him. Mm-hmm. And then he was also very open about mental health, openly spoke about his journey with depression and attempted suicide, mm-hmm. all that. So like everybody who knew Josh knew that that was a struggle. So when the last night before I was flying back home, when I was in Europe, I got this message from one of my best friends saying, I'm so sorry. Let me know if you want to reach out. And I was just so confused. And then that theater group also started a group chat. Everybody was just like bringing up memories. And I was like, why are we talking about Josh right now? And then I looked at my email and the school emailed everybody. And then that's when the kind of like dam broke for me. And I was like, no, mm-hmm. it happened. Like, I knew it was suicide. That was the only, it was the only way that happened, that it would have happened.
They didn't share that in the email?
No. Mm-hmm. So it was definitely sudden. And I definitely think it had to do with the changing political climate of the country. Not feeling comfortable here and being so afraid of afraid of what those 4 years would be like for him. Mm-hmm. And it's still happening. So many anti-trans things. Yeah.
I think what is the most striking and terrible dichotomy of what you're sharing is the way when you first met them, how free and open about Josh's experience Josh was. And so then to have things flip so suddenly and so intensely is what's really hitting. It's what's really striking me right now. And I think also really shows the extremity of what's going on in this country right now.
Yeah.
Had you been in close communication with Josh leading up to his passing?
A little bit. Josh was the kind of person that randomly messaged you all the time. So it was a little overwhelming at times.
Okay. Got it.
I don't have energy for your interviewing.
Yeah, that's okay.
But like when I moved back home after college, I didn't have a job. I felt like everything that I'd worked for was for nothing. Mm-hmm. So I was a little depressed. And he kind of like guided me through that. There was communication there, support in that sense. One, I remember specifically someday in May 2016, he just sent me Tarzan's Son of Man, a link to the YouTube song. And he was like, here, be inspired. And I was like, okay, thank you. It's just like, he knew what depression was like and
yeah,
wanted to uplift people that he knew were struggling too. And that's what he was about. That's like the kind of person he was at school. It was just like, he was a misfit and he loved to create community for people that felt that same way. For the ones that felt most secluded.
What did this event do for your headspace?
Well, I'd never experienced grief. Mm-hmm. So that was new. And it really like rocket launched my exploration of gender and sexuality. Because he was so like, he's a Gemini. So he's, you know, a little out there. He just like gave no fucks. I got a third cupcake.
You gave no fucks.
So exactly. I was like, I need to carry on Josh's legacy mm-hmm. by the way he lived his life.
The messages he was spreading. Yeah.
Yeah. Like stop worrying about other people. If this is your truth, embrace it, live it fully. So like the questions began to arise in me. Like I just spent 2 months in Europe and I didn't have sex with anybody. That's not what Josh would have done. I've always questioned my gender, but like always been like, I can't be trans. Right. But then like, there's also like the question of like, am I trans is connected to like trauma. And it's like, I can't be trans because I don't wear girls' clothes or want to change my genitals, or I don't go down the street and I'm harassed, but it's like, I don't have to be traumatized by society to identify with the community. Mm-hmm. That's just making it harder for the community to be accepted, because then it's just, then the only thing we think about for them is trauma.
Yeah.
What about the joy?
And the examples that you just brought up still exist in this binary, this sort of false binary, even for trans people, like, well, a man becomes a woman and that's that, or a woman becomes a man and that's it.
And there's so much more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm speaking in very generalized basic terms.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Well, so you skyrocketed, and that's kind of fucking beautiful that something beneficial happened to you in your life. It seems like that, exactly like you said, is the best, most beautiful way you could have honored the this passing of this really wonderful person.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Bye.
So,
I'm still not fully there
with regards to what?
I still feel like there's parts of me that I'm holding back, and I think it's still connected to family, but I'm getting braver.
Family can be really hard, especially, I mean, coming out about anything is, in my experience, it's always easier to share new news with people that are newer in your life, like people that haven't known you as long. That's always easier than sharing news about yourself with people that have known you a certain way for so many decades on this earth. That's always the fucking scarier uh-huh. of the two, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And it's hard to unlearn things for other people, or maybe we like fear that it's difficult for them to unlearn things. I don't know. It shouldn't be, but.
I think that's part of it for me. It's like, if it took me 20 plus years to understand it in myself, how long is it going to take for them? Because they are not going to be thinking about me all the time. So right. just like occasional. So if it took me 20 plus years, is it going to take them 40 plus years? Right. And by that time, they're going to be dead.
Oh.
So should I even bring it up? Is it worth it?
Is it worth it? Man, what a question. When did you start going to see this most recent therapist?
That was 2020 felt so long. So
a fucking man. Okay. So like during the pandemic?
It was before the pandemic, because February before the pandemic, I had brought up with the therapist, I'd said, I think I'm ready to be done with therapy. And that was a lie. So I think at that point it had almost been a year.
Let's do some math. So that means you would have been with this person all told for like about two years and some change.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, we're going to hear in a sec about why you decided to stop seeing this therapist. But to be honest, that seems like a fine stretch of time to be in therapy and then decide you don't need it for another stretch of time.
Yeah, I think so.
I feel like there's this... I don't think everyone believes this, but I have encountered a certain amount of people that just believe if you're in therapy, you're in therapy every week for your whole life. And that's not true. Like, therapy is designed to help you understand yourself and like better your thoughts and your actions. The point of going to therapy is to be in a position so that you no longer need therapy. Like, that is sort of base of it, right?
Yeah, that's something my therapist always said. It's like, we're one of the few professions that want our clients to stop paying us.
Which is a fucking terrifying notion, especially from like me, who's been fully underemployed during the pandemic.
Like, great, I don't make money from you anymore. I'm doing my job.
Right. So this experience of leaving your therapist, I can ask plenty of like logistic questions on what it looked like and what it sounded like, what it felt like. But my main curiosity is why?
Well, this is a very specific and complicated situation, I think.
What context do we need?
This therapist is part of like a group of therapists. I don't know what the term for it is. I called them a psychology firm.
Okay.
But that sounds weird because they're not lawyers. But I guess there's a clinical director, and he had brought up with my therapist that maybe there are some people who are ready to be done.
Oh.
And so like, maybe like start to bring up the conversation so that they can open up space for new clients.
Do you know if they had a growing wait list or some sort of external pressure going on?
I have no idea. I kind of did not want to pry too much into it.
Got it. Got it.
Because I didn't want to hear answers that would make me feel shitty.
Uh-huh.
Like one question popped up was, is it because I'm not, like, I have a copay and my insurance is covering it, and maybe like you're not making as much money off of me?
Oh, that would be such a fucking bummer if that was true.
Exactly. So I did not want to ask that. But my therapist was, I love how transparent he is. He was just like, I'm bringing this up because I'm feeling pressured from my boss. But am I pressuring you now? And well, at that time, that was like our fourth to last session. And I was like, no, because like, I kind of, like, I brought it up to you before.
Mm-hmm.
So like, maybe I am ready. And I'm just like prolonging something because I'm afraid of being independent. And this has kind of been a great safe space. And like, there is always going to be stuff that I need or that I want to process here. Mm-hmm. But maybe it is time. I just flew the coop. What's the term? I don't know.
Yeah, both of those. Both of those are great. And when you said these things, you believed them, right? Like it felt authentic to you?
Yeah, until the next few sessions.
Oh my gosh.
I guess like through the pandemic, the biggest struggle for my mental health was dealing with the politics of my family and sometimes friends. I learned that a lot of people were Trump supporters and that shocked me.
Yeah, that must have been really hard.
A lot of them did not like that I marched with Black Lives Matter, that I was telling people to wear masks and get vaccinated. And it was just like, I can't believe I have blood connected to you. That's weird.
Yeah.
But right before I came out to my mom, we had a long discussion about COVID. He was in the conspiracy hole.
Ugh, bummer.
We got her out. But everybody is out. And that was kind of popping up again at the end of my therapy. What do I call it?
Relationship.
Yeah, therapy relationship.
So this was weeks ago at this point, like a month ago, yeah. Right?
Yeah, my last session was the 11th. Mm-hmm. So that was 2 weeks ago. When I had first said, no, this is fine. The 2-3 weeks after, I was definitely not fine. I was pretty much panicking. And he was like, let's use this metaphor. You feel like you've been drowning in this or flailing in this river, and you've come across this lake. And the water's calm here. And the only reason you don't feel calm is because you're still flailing around. And I was like, that is a great point, maybe. But I still feel like I'm in the river, the rapids. I don't feel like I'm at the lake yet. But I guess, like, I don't know when the shift happened. It was just like, maybe him mentioning that, like, I could always return if I am struggling.
Right.
And he was giving me a lot of like affirmation that he felt I was ready.
Okay.
So yeah, I just like kind of thought about it. And I was like, yeah, like I guess I've been in this flailing motion before with when like family says something that's not based in any real science. And I stress out about it because if they believe that, then they'll vote for that person who will make this law, who will make this person feel uncomfortable, who mm-hmm. will then want to take their own life, and it's connected back to the trauma, my friends.
Mm-hmm. But these are seemingly predictable cycles that you've experienced and you've been through, and maybe you'll continue to go through them. But what about sort of dealing with those cycles? Like, did you figure out ways with your therapist to help yourself in the midst of these cycles?
For me, it's always an issue of boundaries, I guess.
Yeah, boundaries are fucking hard.
I care so much.
Yep.
So I want to do everything, and right. I want to help everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I also like want to keep relationships with everyone. So if mm-hmm. this thing is making my relationship with you difficult, I want to fix it immediately. And I have to let that go.
Got it. So change can be really scary when you're leading up to it. So you're like in this weird last four sessions where you know this, you know, pretty huge change is about to happen with you seeing this therapist and then suddenly no longer seeing him, right? Now that the change is behind you, how are you feeling?
It's still a little sad.
Yeah.
For nobody else that knows, I just spent a week in Hawaii.
Oh, yeah. It's like, can we out you? It's okay. I think it's fucking amazing that you were just in Hawaii for a week.
Yeah. A friend brought me out. She was working for a hotel, and so I didn't have to pay. So I was like, yes, I'm going to go cry at the beach.
Amazing.
Okay. I didn't. I mean, I cried a little bit. Yeah. I brought my ukulele and I was playing sad music.
Would you describe this as feeling somewhat like a breakup?
Yes, that's exactly how we talked about it.
You know, one of those bullshit amicable ones, but you're still like sad and pissed.
Yeah, so it's like our last session, we just like talked about goodbyes the whole time. And I was like, well, what kind of goodbyes am I used to? I'm used to saying goodbye to people at the end of the school year. But then there's always the like, I'll see you next time. Unless you graduate from a school, then it's like, when will I ever see you again? Who knows?
Right.
Except we have social media nowadays. So it's like, I'm still kind of in touch with a bunch of people.
True.
So the goodbye is still kind of like amorphous. Like the things that made this one hard was that like, it kind of was sudden again.
Right. I mean, yeah, for like you said, he talked to you about it and then you had three more sessions after that one. And that was it. That's like, in my opinion, fast. Like that would definitely startle me.
Yeah, I was definitely upset about it. Cause I was like, maybe, okay, we're talking about ending. Maybe that's like 2 months. Mm-hmm. And then he was like, I'd like to have three more sessions. And I was like, whoa. So I was like, oh, lordy, lordy, lordy.
Yeah.
But I think that was enough. At the third one, I was like, I had entered the room super nervous about mm-hmm. ending it. But by the end of it, I had kind of come to terms with it. But then I told him, like, I would like one more. I'd like to enter the room confidently and say, I feel good about ending here. Whereas coming in unsure and leaving sure, I want both of those to be sure.
That's good. So you said you have shared with me that you have discomfort with ambiguous goodbyes, but it maybe wasn't as ambiguous as I might have thought.
Yeah. Well, what makes it ambiguous for me is like, will I ever see him again? Like the thing with the goodbye, death is also a goodbye, right? But it's usually sudden and you never see this person again. You never get to talk to them again. All you have left is memories.
Mm-hmm.
But this goodbye is somewhere between death and breakup. There's another, what if that, is that a binary? Weird.
Fuck them all.
The spectrum of death and breakups. Because he's still alive. I could run into him at the grocery store, at
right.
Disneyland, who knows?
Yeah, at a show, fuck it, anywhere. There's that famous scene in The Sopranos where Tony Soprano runs into his therapist at a bar and it's like the most fucking awkward thing in the world for him, for her, actually. He's like all stoked, but she's like, but that was just her. But that's what's coming to mind for me right now. Love that show.
Yeah.
That's a fascinating commentary on straight cis men in therapy, but... Help me connect the dots here on sort of moving towards our final thoughts as far as like this theme of ambiguous goodbyes. Help me connect the dots from leaving your therapist and having that be sort of ambiguous and up in the air to your relationship with your gender right now.
Because the goodbye with Josh was so sudden,
mm-hmm.
but also me having his memories and kind of courage living through me. Like the goodbye. Oh God, I'm getting emotional again.
It's okay.
It's not really a goodbye because he's always living in me.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct.
And that's the same thing with my therapist that made me kind of, another thing that I came to terms with, like the night before my last session, I went to the beach because I always love to, I'm a Cancer. I love large bodies of water. The ocean just always gives me the answers that I need.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was journaling about like what this meant to me, a lot of like my therapist's guiding words were like the most prevalent parts. And so I was like, okay, maybe I am ready to say goodbye because now you're also still living in me.
Oh, that's so cool. I am a Cancer Gemini, and I wish I found so much poeticism in the water as you.
Oh my! I find too much metaphor with, like, I was swimming at the beach, and it was like pushing and pulling me, and I was like uncomfortable with it. And I was too afraid to go in the deep water because I'm afraid of sharks, but that's an irrational fear. So then I was like, just let the irrationality go and go with the flow. Like, I was just like, shut up, mind. You are reading too much into just chilling at the beach.
Oh man.
Oh, while I was in therapy, my phone reminded me, I still have it in my calendar, that Wednesday
Oh.
10 p.m. I had a therapy session. I was like, that's not true anymore.
Oh yeah. Fuck you, Apple, or whatever fucking software
Mine's Android. But
it
I had told my therapist, I was like, maybe I want to keep this appointment in my calendar all the time because it'll be kind of, I'll hold myself to it. I don't need a therapist necessarily to have therapy. I can have it with myself. I can journal for an hour. I can play the uke for an hour. Something to kind of hone in on everything that happened in the week.
Thank you so much for coming on Depressed and Shit, Joseph.
Thank you so much. I've
You're
always wanted
welcome.
to be on a podcast, and thanks for bringing me in.
Your day has come.
Depressed and Shit was recorded in a real live bedroom in Los Angeles, California. Music by Eric England, logo designed by Carrie Weiss, produced and hosted by Real Honest Biatch Liamata. Do you have reactions to today's episode? Do you have an experience with mental health you'd like to share? Or are you the baby angel from the heavens that wants to donate to cover administrative costs and all that fun shit? Email us at depressedandshitpodcast@gmail.com. No asterisk here, folks. That's just the logo. Shit is spelled SHIT, baby. To repeat, depressedandshitpodcast@gmail.com. See you next Wednesday.